Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace is the simplest way to create a landing page or beautiful website for your portfolio, blog, business, or online store. Enter offer code ABOUTANDROID and get 10% off. Squarespace, build it beautiful. And by Blue Apron. Blue Apron will send you all of the ingredients to cook fresh, delicious meals with simple step-by-step instructions right to your door. See what's on the menu this week and get your first two meals free by going to blueapron.com/twit. That's blueapron.com/twit. And by LegalZoom. Get your life organized today with an estate plan bundle at LegalZoom.com. Whether you need a will or a trust, since they're not a law firm, you work with an independent attorney available in most states to find a plan that best fits your needs. Enter AAA in the referral box at checkout. That's LegalZoom.com. Hello and welcome to another episode of All About Android. This is episode 247, recorded on Tuesday, January 5th, 2016. We are your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Owl.
I'm Ron Richards.
Ron Richards, happy new year, sir.
Coming to you live from CES.
And it's true, because you have the badge.
I have a badge. I have a legitimate badge. Although I'm not really at CES. I'm more at my hotel blocks away from CES. But that's where Flo is. She's not on the show this week.
Yep.
Because she's currently right now working. And I think she's covering the Sony press event, I think. So.
Probably. Man, there's so many press events today. I kind of lost track.
Too many. It's crazy town here, let me tell you.
Yeah. So have you seen anything? Or I guess today was kind of like pre-day. Tomorrow it opens up for everybody else.
I picked up my badge. I was over at one of the hotels that have a remote registration area because I wanted to avoid the insanity of the convention hall. But it's crazy. There are tents and like all these things in the parking lot now, the convention hall. Like it looks like it's getting bigger than the facility in Vegas can handle, which is always a great sign. And today you definitely felt that the city swelled with more people. Like there was more traffic and it was tough to get around and it's raining, which is unheard of. So CES, fun times. I'm looking forward to hitting the floor tomorrow and then getting the hell out of here on Thursday.
Get some VR in. That's all I'm saying. I'm like all about VR suddenly. Get your eyes and ears, surrounded by virtual reality and let me know how it is. And so I can be jealous.
Basically. I'll do my best. I mean, I'm here working. I'm here working on the day job.
No, not good enough, Ron. Not good enough.
I'm trying. Anyway.
We're thrilled to welcome back to the show Russell Ivanovic of ShiftyJelly.com. How's it going, man?
Woohoo! It's going well. 2016.
Yeah, welcome back. And you're like in the future 2016, so that joke never gets old. Yeah, it kind of does. I'm sorry.
I heard you make exactly the same joke.
I gotta stop. Hey, okay, so I'll just go ahead and apologize for myself because I've literally been working since like 8 a.m. this morning with two back-to-back shows. So if I collapse in a heap on the table, I have all the faith in the world that you, Russell, and Ron can just take the show and see it to the end while my dead body lays right there.
I am the guy that's on the All About Android homepage. So,
it's true. You know,
I think we got this wrong.
It's true. So you do in a public facing sort of way, you do not one but two Android shows, right? Because you also do
exactly.
You also do Material. See, there you are. There's my co-host, permanent co-host Russell Ivanovic. Of course, he has
looks permanent. I got the microphone, I got the t-shirt, I got everything.
You haven't been on in a while. You've been sick like many weeks in a row. I don't know why, but we're thrilled to get you back. You're also doing another awesome show that's kind of about Google and Android and all that called Material. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so Material Podcast is something we started, I think, just after I.O. And the idea was, there's a lot of good shows out there that cover the news, obviously yours being the best. And we wanted to do something slightly different. So something a bit more kind of heavy, topic focused. And one of our goals was to try and get someone on from Google, you know, some interesting people from in there, you know, once every, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 shows. And so far we've had some really interesting guests. So Matthias Duarte was our latest one, head of Google Design. We've had the Android nearby team on. We've had quite a few interesting people, the people that behind Google Photos as well. So, yeah.
Awesome.
If you want something a bit more in-depth, you know, you've listened to All About Android and you're like, oh, I've got another hour to fill up in my life. Check out material.
Hey, you guys do an awesome show. And yes, I mean, I've done plenty of work with Andy Inako on the network. I used to produce Mac Break Weekly with Andy every single week. So he is awesome. And I'm super stoked at the success. I hear a lot of people and see a lot of, you know, a lot of stuff online just talking about material podcasts in general. So you guys are doing a great job.
Yeah, thanks, man. That's mainly down to Andy and Yasmin. I just turn up and people listen despite me. So that's good.
Well, that is not true. You all make a team. Before we get into the news, we kind of have to do it. Shortly before the show, distribution numbers happened. And,
oh, my favorite time.
Oh, I know, Ron.
You know, I love it. I love this.
I know. It's really exciting. Let's not do them all. Let's just say Marshmallow, 0.7%. Okay. 0.7%. That's where we're at right now.
It's moving up.
I got some, I think we actually did finally, last time I was on, we did distribution numbers as well. I have, exclusive for your listeners, the Pocket Cast ones, which are radically different to the actual store ones. So we have,
really?
On Marshmallow, 18.5% of our users run Marshmallow.
Interesting.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and then you've got over 50% on 5.0 and 5.1.
So wow. There's some, like, you know, analysis jumps you can make in there that your user is probably a, you know, like someone who's active with their device into podcasts, like, yeah. It's a specific, you know, like that 0.7% is the world and probably encompasses a lot of users that aren't similar to your user, to the Shifty Jelly user. So I mean, that's interesting to see, like, which one represents more of the community. I actually think your numbers actually represent more than the general numbers.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing is we're a paid app, so our app costs $4, and I think that makes a big difference as well. So, yeah if you look at it, I'm just trying to add up the numbers here. From Android 5.0 onwards, I think that's about 70% of our users, you know, run Android 5 or above. So that is a huge number compared to, you know, the general numbers that you look at.
Yeah.
That is what we call in marketing a qualified audience.
Yeah, definitely the people that are listening to podcasts right now, still, even though, you know, we've supposedly podcasts have gone through this resurgence, and actually in a second, I'm curious to hear what you think about that, Russell, from your perspective. But even though that is supposedly happening, podcast is still kind of something for the tech literate. You know, it's still something that not everybody understands. And you have to imagine that crossover is probably a little bit of that, right? It's the people who are tech literate that actually care and know to install an app like Pocket Casts to download podcasts are also the ones to make sure that they have an up-to-date phone, that they keep it up-to-date, that they aren't scared by the update message when it appears, you know, things like that. Kind of getting back to that before we move into the news, Russell, what is your perspective as a developer and creator of one of the more, if not the most popular podcast apps on Android? What do you think? Are we seeing a resurgence, or is this just kind of like, oh, this again? I remember when we talked about this a couple of years ago.
Well, I mean, I think the trend is in the right direction. So if I like to go and look at all the figures and all the different studies people do. And obviously I have access to our own numbers as well, you know, how many users we have. And the graph is just like this. It's a very slow sort of gradual incline, but it's definitely on the up. And I think every now and again you get a bump. So, you know, we definitely had the serial bump. I don't know if there'll be a serial season 2 bump, but there's definitely, you know, shows that seem to break out of that, oh, you know, it's a tech news show or that kind of category.
Yeah.
I think podcasting is slowly going more mainstream. So if you look at the radio numbers, you know, they're definitely on the decline. People are looking for things to listen to on their commute. You know, they're in the car, they're on the train, they're on a bus, you know, whatever. And podcasts are perfect for that, because if you think about when you're driving, you can't really watch videos, you can't do anything with your hands. You're meant to be driving, but your ears are, you know, in theory, completely free. And I think that's the future of podcasting, is, you know, in the car, on the commute. And also, I mean, I find it really cool just when I'm doing, you know, housework, mowing the lawn, whatever. You stick on a podcast and suddenly, you know, life is a bit more interesting. And I think it is slowly breaking out of that tech sort of mold. So I had a lot of family ask me this holiday break, oh, I've heard about this podcast thing. You know, what podcast should I get into? I had a few of them even ask, what app should I use?
Oh, really? That was my next question. Really?
You're asking that? Okay.
I heard that you're somewhat involved with this podcast thing. What should I install?
I have this purple icon on my iPhone. Should I use that? I'm like, no,
please don't. No.
Right on. Cool. Well, we're all in the right place at the right time then, if that's the case with podcasts going upwards. All right. Hey, Brian.
Yeah.
First news drop of the year. Go.
Oh, yeah. It's a new year, but it's the same old Android goodness coming up now with Android news.
I thought you were going to say it's the new year, but the same old news.
Same old.
It actually, and in this case, it actually, that is same exactly the case. This top story, really, totally. The second really story. Is. Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. Same old news. Here we go. All right. With that, we know something concrete about the as yet unannounced Android version N. We haven't heard anything specific about Android N coming from Google until now. It will rely on OpenJDK, Oracle's open source version of the Java development kit, as opposed to its current implementation of Java APIs. Why is this a big deal? Well, for starters, one could assume it could have something to do with the now years-old Oracle lawsuit with Google regarding whether Java's APIs are copyrightable or not, and if Google used those APIs through fair use or not. That, of course, is still being decided after the Supreme Court declined, passed it back down to the lower court. So we'll see where that lands. But thought this was interesting. Is it Andre Gall? He's the former CTO at Mozilla. Wrote a very interesting post about this, that this is actually a huge grant of power to Oracle over Android. It says, with the app ecosystem now resting on top of OpenJDK, Oracle has the ability to make changes to Android, and Google can actually do very little to prevent that. Java includes the Swing UI library, and as such, so will Android, which basically means Oracle can pass along any code or service that it wants as a part of that. So this story, on one hand, this story is like super complicated, and like I had to read these articles multiple times to really kind of understand what the point is. But on the other hand, it really seems like the public perception on a lot of stories that I read was that, hey, this is a good thing. Google's breaking free of Oracle. But then I read this thing by Andre Gall, and I was like, oh, crap. This could actually be a really bad thing. I don't know. Where do you guys stand on this? What do you think?
So I read that article, and I have a huge background in the Java world. I used to be an enterprise Java developer. So
excellent.
I know all about the JDKs and the open JDKs. And I think, with all due respect to Andreas, I think he got it completely and utterly wrong. Like,
thank you for being here. Seriously.
The whole idea that, yep. So Swing is a UI library that, you know, when you're using terrible desktop apps and you're like, why does this look a bit funky? It's generally because it's written in Java and Swing, and there's no way that's ever going to ship inside Android. Oracle doesn't actually have the power to push that down and make Google use it. In fact, Google has already removed it, you know, long ago from the implementation that they're using it. All it means is if someone wants to modify the core libraries in Android, so let's say Google wants to cut something out or one of the manufacturers wants to rip something out, and this, you have to remember, this is at the level where you're talking about, okay, I have this string of characters and I want to get the fifth character and I want to do this with it. It's all those kind of low-level APIs that developers rely on. It's not the Android UI. It's not Android networking. It's not any of that stuff. It's just the really, really low-level stuff. If they want to make changes in there, then technically they'd have to open source the changes. And I think, as much as Andreas seems to be saying that, you know, Google would be against that and they'd never do it, I really can't see the problem with that. You know, if you make a change to the way you get characters out of a string or the way you do something else, open sourcing that stuff is not, it's not an industry secret. It's not a big deal. And it's something that already happens in the kernel development world. So below that, again, you've got this low-level thing called a kernel, which, you know, runs all the low-level functions of your phone. And that's already under the same license where if Google or a manufacturer changes it, technically they have to publish their changes. I know sometimes there's a lot of, if you want to get into the depths of it, there's a lot of friction with that. Some manufacturers don't do it, some do it late, some don't do it properly. That's a whole nother discussion. But I think the whole basic premise that this gives Oracle some kind of power over Android is just not true. In fact, if I have the time, I think I might even write it up. I mean, that's something we could spend an entire show talking about.
You could spend an entire show talking about it.
I lost you guys already.
No, I mean, it makes sense to a certain degree, but I think in order for it to really kind of be this well-formed idea and really understand what it means, it sounds like what you're saying is it really has little to no impact on the common user. It might have an impact on, I mean, is there a possibility that any of this could break the code or any of the dependencies that developers have already by using the old versus the new way?
No, I think that that'd be very, very rare. So if anything, okay, it'll lead to less bugs. So Google actually had their own, and they call this a clean room thing, where the idea is you've sat down and you implemented your own version of it, so you can't get sued and whatever else. Turns out they got sued anyway, so what are you going to do? But it shouldn't lead to any new bugs. If anything, it should fix some of the outstanding bugs that are, you know, at the low level. And the only time your app might break potentially is if you've tried to work around some of those bugs. And your workaround, you know, once the bug is no longer there, actually breaks your app. That's the only way I could see it actually negatively affecting things. But even then, I imagine they'll do it so that you have to compile against the new version before you get all that stuff. In short, I don't think this is anything end users have to worry about, like, at all. And even as developers, I don't think this is going to change a lot. In fact, I've seen a lot of developers excited because it means we can potentially now move forward in the version of Java that we use. So, again, not to get too deep into it, but at the moment, Android is still developed in Java 6, which is mega old. I don't have it off the top of my head how old it is, but it is super, super old. Java 8 is already out with some new sort of language features that developers really want to use. And the thing that's been holding us back is, you know, we're not on this OpenJDK thing. We don't have access to it. So now I don't think Google's said one way or another, but now the potential is there so that the language can actually start moving forward again.
Looks like Java 6, 2006. So, man,
yeah, there
almost,
you go.
Almost 10 Long years time old. Ago. There you go. There you go. All right. Well, phew. I'm really happy you're here. Thank you.
Yeah. But, hey, if you want to freak out, you still can. But
I don't know. Sometimes we're just looking for a reason to freak out, apparently.
And that's the thing. Looking at Andreas Gall blog post, I mean, I get where he's coming from in terms of the, you know, hey, this gives Oracle more power. But it's an open, you know, open source developer kit, you know what I mean? Like, how, like, you know, he's applying a lot more doom and gloom than actually, you know, Oracle. It doesn't make any sense. I guess that's how I kind of analyzed it. Mm-hmm. And so
the other thing, I don't know if you noticed, sorry, just quickly further down in the comments, it was actual, like, an ex-Google engineer sort of jumped in and commented, and it turns out the reason they didn't use OpenJDK when Android first launched is because OpenJDK didn't exist back then. So the whole trying to imply like a malice or an intent to know they were trying to get around, you know, the licensing, whatever. I'm not sure at that level that Google even cares. Like, I'm sure there's some stuff they definitely don't want open source, but I don't think the core language libraries really matter like that much.
Cool. Hey, Ron, how about we shift gears a little bit and talk about something that we've both had experience with? One of us had somewhat viral experience with.
Well, yes. Yeah. Well, and we all know that we just love to talk about Google Glass. We love to see what the future holds for Google Glass. And it looks like for now we're getting a glimpse at what 2016 might hold for Google Glass in the world of enterprise applications. Some photos of an unannounced device, the quote-unquote enterprise edition of Google Glass, have surfaced. And it features a hinge system for collapsing the unit when it's not in use. They've also updated the internals of the device, including an Intel Atom processor, better battery performance, improved wireless connectivity, like on the 5 gigahertz spectrum on Wi-Fi, and as a yet unseen external battery pack with a magnetic charging attachment, and also a larger prism and a light to indicate that the camera is active, learning from all the mistakes of Google Glass in the past. And it looks like this device is not going to be sold to consumers. Rather, it's going to be made available for Glass for Work startups, and they'll be able to load their own software onto the devices to test. As we look at Glass inches its way into a enterprise solution application, and I got to say, that device, other than the hinge, doesn't look any different than the previous iteration. So my hopes and dreams of them taking it and moving it forward, it looks like it's just going to look like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, the prism's definitely extended further. That's not quite twice the same size as the prism, but it's close, it looks like. I don't know. That's extra. I don't know if that's good. I guess it's like extra space. I don't know. Google Glass.
You guys sound a bit bitter about your glass experience. Am I detecting that?
I'm a little bitter right now with Glass because I charged it up for Christmas morning because I wanted it. This is a totally selfish reason. Charged it up because I wanted to do video of the kids seeing the Santa Claus stuff, and it didn't work. I charged it up. I can hit record, and it'll record, but then it says tap to extend it, and I would, and it wouldn't extend. So it would only do 10-second chunks. And I was like, so seriously, the thing that I use you for, I can't use you for anymore, Google Glass? I'm over you. I'm a little disappointed, a little bitter. But hey, this is, you know, Google Glass always had there were always people kind of finding really great uses and applications for it in the enterprise. So it totally makes sense that it would kind of be geared for that. And one of the biggest complaints was the fact that it was a rigid unit that could not be collapsed in any way, shape, or form. So that's a pretty darn big improvement, even though it kind of sounds like it's not. I mean, all you had to do was get your hands on the original version of the Google Glass and realize, like, really? It only ever holds in this position. There's nothing I can do about that. It makes it inconvenient in every way. So that's a good improvement, I think.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's going to live on. And the thing is, I can see enterprise applications, you know, like I could see, you know, medical applications, like any sort of thing where people need to get data to be able to see it, but then need their hands, you know, similar to Microsoft's HoloLens. Like, I see that as a potential future, you know, and we just got to be patient to see what these startups come up with. So,
yeah. And let's see here. Android Auto. I kind of want some Android Auto in my car, but I'm going to have to upgrade my car. But thankfully, I have more options to do that with. Getting a few more big partners, namely Ford, which says that all 2017 models sold in North America with the Sync 3 platform will have Android Auto as an option. And all 2016 models will be upgradable later this year. So that's pretty awesome. That's a large sea of options there. As well, Fiat Chrysler automobiles will include Android Auto in the fourth generation of its Connect infotainment system in select models during 2016, joining General Motors, Chevrolet, and Hyundai, among others who have gotten in on the Android Auto game. And actually, what we're seeing, actually, more than just Android Auto in these cars, is we're seeing almost like, as far as I can tell anyways, dual operational infotainment systems, where do you have Android or do you have iOS? And depending on what you have, you can connect it to it. And that's cool. That's the way it should be, right? Because Absolutely. Then you don't have to like plan your car purchase around your phone, which that sucks.
Could you imagine getting a car with this stuff and then changing your phone? And then
exactly.
Like, oh, I can't even use. Yeah, exactly. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. What were you going to say, Russell?
Yeah, not many people change their cars like every year, like I do phones. So.
exactly. So that's cool. Hopefully this means we'll see a little bit more of this. It definitely seems like the auto industry has recognized the need to have compatibility, and that's a huge change from even – I feel like it was 10 years ago that you were hard-pressed to find an auxiliary port, even though everybody was using that, you know, some way to hack their system to get – audio from, you know, a CD player or their, you know, their MP3 player into their car in some way, shape, or form, and they finally all relented on that. So now we're seeing this, and I think that's a great.
I can't tell you. I still in 2016, I still get annoyed when I get a Zip car and it's got a USB port, and I plug in my phone, and it's like iPod not recognized. It's like that single one adoption of supporting, you know, iPods and iOS devices in cars, but no other media devices on, you know, it just drives me crazy. So
Yep.
All right. Well, now for our first email of 2016, which is actually quite relevant given my adventures in Las Vegas this week. Chris from Parkville, Maryland writes in and says, I was listening to your year in review show and had some thoughts about Samsung Pay. By the way, there's an enormous Samsung Pay is here banner on the side of a hotel right on the strip. So Samsung is really introducing Samsung Pay to Vegas, pretty big. So Chris says, I think Florence was talking about the awkwardness of using it. My advice, don't ask. It may be a little rude to the cashier, but by the time they say we don't accept Apple Pay and you say this isn't Apple Pay, it's something else, the transaction is usually processing. I can't tell you how many times the next sentence is, that's cool. Which brings me to my question. Is it anything more than cool? I use it to add security to transactions at terminals that still only accept the magnetic stripe. If you're at a terminal that takes a chip card, what is the point of Samsung Pay? Correct me if I'm wrong, but since the chip card transaction is tokenized, there's no apparent security benefit. At that point, what is the point? I can't remember the last time I forgot a credit card at home. Samsung doesn't appear to be offering any kind of budgeting, financial, any sort of budgeting or financial plans. Is there something I'm missing? Are we doing it simply for the joy of paying with our phones? And to that, I would say, Chris, yes, because we're getting a frick. And this, and I would say this isn't just specific to Samsung Pay, but to Android Pay and to Apple Pay and all these other phone-based payment systems. You're getting a frictionless payment experience that doesn't require you to open up your wallet or do anything. And great example, all of the cabs here in Vegas all support Android Pay. All right. I have not paid in cash and I've not pulled a credit card out of my wallet, out of my back pocket. I've just tapped my phone to the payment terminal in the cab and it pays. And that ease of use, if you ask me, that's the value add.
Has it worked every single time without redoing it once
every
or
time.
Twice? Every time?
Every time, first try. Yep.
All right.
So, I think it's that. And also, you know, good for you, Chris, that you haven't forgotten a credit card at home. I've now had two trips back to New York where I've left all of my credit cards back in my
That's
car.
Right. You did not too long ago.
Yes.
Russell, what were you going to say?
I was going to make the usual international guest comment that Tap to Pay is amazing. We've had it here for like many years and the whole concept of just boop and then you walk away is cool. And yep. If I can get that on my phone instead of having to carry a card, I'm all for that, as long as there's no extra steps. Like I don't have to enter like a 64-digit code or anything like that. And with the nice little fingerprint reader that things like the Nexus 6P have, then that's pretty much all gone.
Yeah, yep. It helps.
I've had enough positive experiences with it where I'm behind it. And it's, you know, getting to that point of it's just, I mean, I would love that you don't have to do anything. You just say, pay it. And it just, and it happens, you know, but just tapping the phone to a terminal is so much easier than pulling out a credit card now.
Yeah. Some sort of geofencing is pretty cool.
Just kind of wave your hand across the air. I have paid.
It would be force pay.
Yeah.
We should patent.
Oh man, that should so be a thing.
I'm pretty sure Disney probably already has the patent on that, Russell. So.
All right.
No, I don't know. You know, like I'm 50-50 on paying with Android Pay and Google Wallet and all that kind of stuff. Anytime I try and use it, I feel like I encounter speed bumps. And anytime that happens, it makes me less inclined to use it the next time. And I've talked about it on the show plenty of times. Yep. But yes, if I can get to the point to where I use it and, you know, I pull it out and I use it and it works the first time and that's just all like I can expect that. And great. I can always expect my credit card to work. Like, it always works unless the magnetic stripe is, you know, deteriorating or something like that. But
which happens.
It happens. But you know that it's happening with a mobile payment. It's like, well, we're going to see how this goes.
Yeah.
We're going to see how this goes again.
And it's funny though, because even with the addition of the chip in cards, I had this experience over the holidays where I have a credit card that has a chip that I've never used it as a chip payment where you slide it in. I've always used it as a swipe credit card.
Right.
It is a credit card. It's not a debit card. And I went to Best Buy and the guy's like, no, you got to use the chip for that. And so I put it in and then asked me for a PIN. I have never gotten a PIN number from this credit card company ever. I've never heard of a PIN. And I was like, well, I don't have the PIN. He's like, well, I can't sell it to you. And I said, really? And I was like, you can't just swipe it the way we used to do it. And it was just not a good situation. And so I understand the chip and PIN is something that's used internationally and we're adopting to it and changing it and all stuff like that. But there's still speed bumps in that process as well, too.
Yeah. Not to mention
that. Then I used another credit card, which has a chip and didn't get asked for a PIN. So it's an inconsistent experience.
Weird. Yes, yeah, exactly.
Weird.
No!
Exactly.
Yeah. You don't support force pay. I like the idea of a force pay.
Force pay is pretty cool.
Yeah. Hey, let's take a break. Pay some bills. Let's thank the sponsor. First sponsor of this episode is Squarespace. Man, I love Squarespace. Makes it easy to create beautiful, professional websites. The best part about it is you don't have to know what you're doing. They do all the heavy lifting for you, whether you need a simple landing page, the perfect portfolio, professional blog, online store. It's all included with your Squarespace website. Sites look professionally designed regardless of your skill level with no coding required. I have no skill level. I used to like to trick myself into thinking that I had skill level. Then I realized I don't. And the things that I would create didn't look good. Squarespace gives you all these templates kind of as starting points. And there are a ton of them that are kind of tailored to, you know, they can be tailored to if you're a musician or if you own a business and you sell, you know, you sell clothes or all this kind of stuff. And they're starting points. So you load up the template, you customize it using their interface, which is really easy to use. It makes a ton of sense. And you know exactly what you're changing while you're doing it. It's just a great way to get, you know, customize all those things, fonts, colors, page configurations, everything. You can make a site that looks unique. Even though you're starting with a template, you'll end up with a site that looks unique with just a few clicks. Mobile is built in. All designs are responsive, a must-have in this day and age. So your website scales to look great on any device, be it a small phone, a tablet, a desktop, however that device is, whatever it's sized, your site's going to look awesome on it. Pricing is simple with Squarespace, plus you get a free custom domain with an annual purchase. Power your business with Squarespace Commerce. It's the only platform that lets you create, manage, and brand your store in a beautiful way. They have a basic plan as well as an advanced plan that has features for your growing business. Plus, they have incredible 24/7 customer support. If you're a musician, you have a business, you're getting married, Squarespace is for you. Literally, you can do it all. I have a site, illegoldmusic.com. It's a Squarespace site. It's perfect for serving up my music. Ron, I know you have a Squarespace site. One of them anyways. What is it? Goodfellas Minute? That's got to be one.
No, it's my ronxo.com is powered by Squarespace.
Ronxo.com. Yep. We all use it because we love it. Start your free trial. No credit card required at squarespace.com. You can make sure to use our promo code here. It's About Android, and you'll get 10% off to show your support for this show. Let Squarespace know you heard about it through watching All About Android. Perfect. Everybody wins. Squarespace.com, promo code About Android for 10% off. Squarespace, build it beautiful. Thank you, Squarespace. I love Squarespace ads because I'm such a fan of the site and of the sites that I've made as a result. So awesome.
Easy,
you guys.
It's easy to talk about how great it is when you use it.
Absolutely.
It's simple.
There you go. Hey, let's talk about some things that we have not used because we are not at CES. Well, you are, Ron, but you haven't used these in hardware. Yeah. Okay, and I'm realizing right now, I mean, things are breaking at this very moment.
Yep.
Things are happening. I think Sony has their presser that just started at 6, which is 13 minutes ago, 6 p.m. Pacific. So maybe we'll touch in on that in a little bit once we know firmly what's going on and what's important and not. But let's talk about the things that we do know have already happened. Huawei, for example. I thought some pretty cool stuff from Huawei's announcements earlier today. First up, should be noted that Huawei is doing awesome. There was a Wall Street Journal article that's just basically saying they're kicking all sorts of butt right now, and that's evidenced by the fact that last year, 2015, was just a great year. We saw the Nexus 6. We saw Huawei just kind of impressing and actually making an impact, I think, with a lot more people as opposed to just being a Chinese manufacturer of some sort. Sales grew by nearly 70% last year, more than $20 billion, shipping 108 million smartphones. Man, these numbers, I can't even comprehend those numbers. So it's been a good year for Huawei, and they're continuing that. I think the big reason is that Huawei creates really nice hardware. The quality of their hardware far surpasses the cost of the hardware in most cases. Generally, the software, not so awesome. It's probably part of the reason why the Nexus 6P, which is Huawei made, has done so well because it's running stock Android, and it is a fantastic device. So what did they announce at CES? The Mate 8, which is a phone, $349.99. Going global, 5.5-inch display, full HD, running Android 5.1. It's got a 1.5 gigahertz Qualcomm Snapdragon 615. It's an octa-core processor. Couple of different configurations, 16 gigs all the way up to 128 gig storage, 3,000 milliamp hour battery. Just a nice-looking phone with fingerprint reader on the back, similar to the Nexus 6P. And so this is where you kind of get into the hardware, great, software, they've got something called, I think it's like Knuckle Touch or whatever. Oh, yeah, which you're jeez, where you can where it recognizes so that you're holding your knuckle out, and yeah, I don't know.
Oh, jeez,
that looks like he's about to put his fist through the phone.
Yeah, I know. Be careful. Be careful that you don't get upset and just drive right through it. But the device itself looks really nice, and you can't balk at $349.99. Also, the Huawei MediaPad M2, which is a 10.1-inch display tablet, 1920 by 1200 display, fingerprint sensor on the tablet. I actually do like seeing that on the larger form factor tablets, because once you go fingerprint sensor, it's really hard to go back. It's such a convenient way to unlock and protect your device. And it also has a pen with 2,048 levels of sensitivity. So if pen slash stylus is your thing, there you go. It's kind of, I don't know. Could we say this is Huawei's attempt at iPad Pro or a Samsung? You know, their larger form factor tablets with a pen as well. I guess that's what it is, but it's pretty good price.
That's the trend, right? I mean, if all this stuff with Huawei is like, wow, I feel like Huawei's been around, but this is almost like, okay, 2016 is big. Like they're hitting on all the different notes mm-hmm. of the different kind of trends in hardware. Yeah. Might as well do a pad with a tablet with a pen.
I mean, and then you talk about cost for the quality hardware, $349 starting. If you want it with LTE, $469. So pretty competitive, I would say, a nice, well-built tablet. And then finally, we'll see how this strikes you guys. I got a very lukewarm response with this one on today's Tech News Today with Megan Maroney and Lindsay Turrentine, two people who these watches might be geared towards. The Huawei Watch Elegant, which is a $499 version of Huawei's watch, probably my favorite wearable from 2015. And then the Jewel, which is $599, which includes Swarovski crystals around the edge of the watch. So they're targeting these primarily at women's wrists. Although the watches, I found this interesting, are slightly larger than the men's than the traditional model. But I don't know. What do you guys think?
I'm not a genius, but I would have thought if you want to make a woman's watch, you could probably just start by making it smaller. You don't have to cover it in jewels. You don't have to make it gold. Yep. Just make it smaller. There's my secret manufacturer tip for CES 2017.
See, and I would agree with you. Lindsay Turrentine, like I said, on Tech News Today, she's with CNET and she's at CES. She's been taking a look at everything. She didn't see this in person, but she did make the point that there are a lot of women that like a larger watch specifically because it makes their because it makes their wrists look smaller.
This
is an angle that I did not know of, but I believe Lindsay.
I believe it too. I love how we've got three white guys talking about women's watches. What I think women really want in a watch.
Being very careful to talk about this duo of watches. Yeah.
Was this the announcement where the guy from Huawei referred to this as the lady watch?
I wouldn't be surprised. I didn't watch the announcement, but I did see some press stuff call this the quote women's watch.
Yeah, no, but I think I saw people tweeting from the event or whatever, and they said the lady watch, and yeah, that they totally did. The guy called it. Yeah, exactly. I'm looking at tweets from last night. Troy Wolverton tweeted, Huawei is explicitly targeting women with the new model, calling it the quote unquote lady watch. So,
Troy Wolverton
tweeted the lady watch is wonderful. Just walked right into that one.
Unfortunately, when we start talking about the Huawei watch, it's very hard to not walk into that.
Here's a tweet in the chat from our good friend Brian. I put in there. Phil Nickinson says, the lady watch is not really something you ever want to hear an executive say.
Yeah.
So Phil zeros right in on that last night or this morning. Sorry. And that says it. So there you go.
There you go. There you go.
The weighty watch from Huawei for your wrists. I'm sorry.
It's hard to avoid. It's hard not to go there. What else we got, Ron?
Okay, so you know that little company that we've been rooting for that seems like they're going down in flames, HTC? HTC had an interesting announcement with the folks at Under Armour saying that they're working together for a product called HealthBox. The kit includes a scale, a fitness tracker and heart rate tracker. And you can get this all for $400 that you can pre-order now. And it launches on January 22nd. And it's designed to be worn night and day and syncs with both Android and iOS apps. So HTC and Under Armour, you know, Under Armour is, you know, I have running gear by Under Armour. They're a great clothing manufacturer. So it looks like HTC teams up with the, where people go to for their fitness clothes, to come up with this digital scale and fitness tracker to get into this game. Cause everybody loves the fitness. So is it worth $400? The design looks pretty nice.
That's the trick right there. $400 is that's a chunk of change.
That's for a fitness But if you look at it though, you're getting a scale, which though I've priced those out. A decent one is about $150, right? How much is a fitness tracker? How the Fitbits and all the like of the world? They probably about $100 or so, right? Mm-hmm. And then a heart rate tracker, that's probably another $100. So $400, it adds up to, you know, I think $400 makes sense, but it is a bit of a sting. And you're probably paying an extra $50 to $75 for the Under Armour brand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, for sure, yeah. I guess it's good to see HTC kind of branching out a little bit, doing some things that maybe you didn't expect. I don't know, you know, anytime HTC comes out with a new product, you're like, is this enough to save HTC? And I'm not sure that this necessarily is in and of itself, but I still like to see that they're playing around with it. And the hardware itself, like just from a design perspective, I think it looks nice. Probably that Under Armour strap is a better way to, you know, to do heart rate monitoring than we've discovered our watches are. You know, I don't know exactly how these are. I just know that I use them, and I don't know why I use them when I do, and whether to trust or not. I don't know whether to trust or not, and even if I do, why do I care so much? So I'm probably not the right target audience for them.
Who knows?
But
I don't use it.
Do you even use your watch anymore?
I do not. The battery died, and I got into a thing where the charger wasn't charging unless it was on the cradle at the right angle, and then I was just like, and I just got too busy. So
yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to talk next about the Asus Zenfone Zoom. 1 year ago, we heard about the Zenfone Zoom, and yesterday Asus showed off the world's thinnest phone that's packing a 3x optical zoom lens. Yes, it's time for that phone to finally get its U.S. release.
Finally.
We waited long enough. It was going to come around. 13 megapixels with, quote, super resolution mode. This is 4 pictures into 1 high-resolution image. So that could be interesting. Optical image stabilization is on board. Is targeted for February release of $399. So if you're into photography,
this looks a lot like that Nokia made one like this, didn't it?
Yeah, right.
The same circle thing on the back.
I thought it looked very familiar, but you're right. That's what it is. I can't remember what that one was called, but yeah, it was a Nokia.
There are some Windows fans out there just raging at us right now. Yeah, blah, blah. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Guys, it was the Nokia Lumia 1050. I just don't know if you guys use Windows phones, but...
There we go. Brian for the win. Is this the Windows phone that you've been using, Brian?
No. Actually, this one's nicer than the Windows phone I was using, but...
Okay.
Still familiar with it.
You've moved on, though. You're not Windows Phone anymore.
No, I fortunately got a 6P that fell into my lap that I'm still testing.
Still testing that 6P.
Someone else was testing it before I started testing.
I see. I see how that works.
I see how it is.
Yes. So I'm really enjoying that phone at the moment.
We'll see how long that lasts.
I'm just waiting for that ball to drop.
I might have to log into Android Device Manager and wipe it remotely.
Oh, God.
Wow. Just make it scream.
Or Google will. It's their phone. We got to get it back to them at some point.
Actually, on
single phone they've sent us.
What's that? Internet.
They've sent us a lot of phones over the years, and I don't think we've given a single one back. So, don't tell anybody.
Oh, that's good news for me.
Never mind.
Actually, Android Device Manager saved my night on New Year's because someone swiped my jacket by accident New Year's evening, and I was able to find it through the GPS in Roner Park. And then I was able to ring it, and I could hear it inside the person's apartment ringing. And finally, the person answered the phone and was like, I think we got your jacket by mistake. do you want me to come out and hand it to you? I was like, yeah, I'm right outside. Like, I track the phone to your place, so please bring it out.
That's not gonna freak the people out.
The call's coming from inside the house.
Yeah, exactly.
Dude, that is awesome.
So it worked out. The guy was actually super nice. His friends grabbed it by accident because it looked just like their jacket. And thanks to Android Device Manager, I was able to pinpoint it to like about a 20 meter radius.
Wow.
Yeah, it worked out.
That's like a true success story of why Android Device Manager exists.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. That's awesome, man.
Crazy.
Maybe a little less necessary is this spec case, Ron.
Well, I don't know about necessary, but it's clever. That's for sure.
Yeah, so it's clever.
If you're familiar with the folks at Spec, they make SPECK. They make some great cases. I know a lot of people swear by them for their cases for iPhones, as well as they've been making Samsung cases. And at CES, they announced their Spec Pocket VR, which is an attachment to one of their cases that is a foldable Google Cardboard VR headset. This is kind of genius. So what you need is that it costs $70. Which gets you the collapsible viewer as well as their candy shell grip case, which sells for about $35. So the price of the viewer probably is about $45 or so, plus the case, which is $35, hence the $70 price tag. And what happens is that you use their case and you get this collapsible VR viewer that just kind of opens up, as you can see here in the graphic, and snaps onto the case, and boom, you've got a Google Cardboard viewer. It's a lot more durable and a lot easier to carry around than the piece of cardboard that Google provides you. And it just seems like clever. Like, nice. Again, it's like one of those things where like, oh, wow, how come somebody hasn't done this yet? That's a neat little VR announcement at CES. So there you go.
Yeah, it's a nice little viewer. I like it. And spec cases, by the way, are actually really good.
They're really good.
Yeah. They're super good for like durability and stuff like that. My wife has one on her 5X. And it's just a great case.
Yeah.
We'll take three, Ron, if you're taking orders.
Yeah.
Oh, geez. I gotta find out how to get my hands on those. Wow. All right.
You just need to stop by the booth and ask them for samples.
I'll get some samples. Yeah. Exactly.
Cool. Get on that. And finally, Lenovo announced the Vibe S1 Lite sells for around $199, though likely not in the U.S. or European markets because of, Motorola. They're kind of the same thing. Motorola does that. Dual pane glass body, 13-megapixel rear-facing camera, 8-megapixel, quote, selfie camera, 5-inch IPS 1080p display with a MediaTek octa-core processor at 1.3 gigahertz, 2 gigs of RAM. It's 8.5 millimeters thin, so it's a pretty thin device. And there you go, Lenovo. Not quite Motorola, not going to hit us, but hey, there you go. But Lenovo did have something else that was actually kind of cool. It's called the Lenovo Link, not to imply that that wasn't cool. The Lenovo Link, a 32-gig flash drive with USB 3.0 port on the opposite end. So it plugs into your computer, let's say, and then on the opposite end, USB 3.0 port, that extra port then transforms your computer into a remote desktop for the phone when it's connected. It has support for remote view of the phone, including full navigation from the desktop. You can drag and drop, has support for that, all that kind of stuff. And it also supports switching between desktop and phone screen using your desktop mouse, kind of like how when you have multiple monitors and you just move from one monitor to the other. So maybe that doesn't make as much sense when you've got a phone plugged into it, but maybe you've got a larger screen tablet and you want to use the desktop on your tablet coincided with the desktop on your desktop computer, your Windows PC. You can do that. $40 for a 32-gig model, available March 2016. Should be noted that Samsung has this. It's called SideSync. Visor is an app that does this. So whether $40 is worth it for something like this, sometimes it's nice to have the hardware unit. I don't know. I don't know why I'd use this, but I guess it's kind of cool. You guys have any use for something like this?
Not really.
No. I don't want to sound unexcited about it. In fact, I was more excited by the fact that maybe someone had made a USB drive that you could still plug USB into while you were using it. I don't know why that got me excited, but I'm like, that is a good idea.
That's a really good idea, actually.
Why does that not exist?
Like a pass-through.
Yeah, I'm like, how did someone really not think of this? Idea. How long have we had USB for?
That has to. Oh, somebody's had to have done that. But
USB
Yeah, I know. There's plenty of people searching at this point.
Forget the whole connect to the phone thing. Just throw that away. Just give me the USB on the other end.
I just want a really good flash drive that has USB pass through. That's all I'm looking for, really. All right. And there have been, you know what, Brian? You might as well just play breaking news. Sure, let's do it.
Let's do it.
I realize I'm throwing this on you, but there we go. Because as we've been going, I just put the link down there at the very bottom before the ad in the doc. Casio has its first Android Wear watch ruggedized up to a month of battery life. What is going on here? How is this possible? Android Wear, literally just saw this. Sport watch styling definitely has a rugged design. It doesn't have a bad looking design. It, you know, looks good, kind of sporty.
They're not physical hands, are they?
No.
How else do you get a month of battery?
I don't know how you get a month of battery. Small screen, 1.32 inches.
What they don't show you is the external battery that you wear along with this and the small, very small cable that connects to it. Yeah.
It's a battery
You can pour water on it and it'll be okay.
It's a battery that folds into your sleeve.
Yeah, exactly. It actually embeds into your arm and uses the electricity that is running through the human nervous system to power it.
It's okay.
That would be cooler. Sorry, you were going to say, Jess.
Oh, no, go for it. Go for it. You found it.
I was going to say it's a dual layer LCD, so you can have the monochrome LCD, which I guess is where you get all your battery savings from, or you can have the full color one, which I assume only lasts for a day or two.
That's clever. So it's a double display.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, it goes from over a day to over a month.
And it has...
So here's the question. Do I need to be lost in the woods to use this?
It looks like the traditional, you know, Casio digital watch from like 20 years ago. That's why you need it. End of story.
I mean, it's not. Am I wrong? Is it not a bad looking watch? I can't trust my eyes with watches anymore. Android Wear. I never know whether a watch looks good or bad because I had stopped wearing a watch for so long, and now I'm like aware of them again. I just don't know if I like it or not. I think it looks okay.
These videos make the watch look enormous.
Yeah,
even the pictures do. I think it actually is enormous. Yeah. Like judging by the size of the lugs and the buttons and things. I think this is a big watch.
Smaller screen, but larger body, it looks like.
Casio really likes the... Remember, Jason, back when we started the show when you were shopping for a new phone and I was trying to get you to get that Casio rugged phone?
Yes.
Casio really likes the rugged market. Like the really, you could beat this device up. You know, like they're really all about that. So I guess this isn't a surprise, but yeah, that's neat.
All right. Well, there you go. It also, by that video, by the way, it looked like there was some sort of like camera attachment that you could have on your backpack strap.
Jeez.
So that you could use your watch to take a picture see where you are.
You can actually take video when the bear mauls you like in The Revenant.
Yes. Hopefully you can fire off that video before you die. Let's take a break. Thank a sponsor. That's CES, by the way. I'm sure there will be more CES next week. But there you go. We've only just begun, and next week we will have another CES hardware block.
In the great scheduling of All About Android, as we do the show right before CES starts.
Right at the start of it, just enough to give you a little bit. But that way we don't have to have a show completely filled with it, just mostly filled with it.
Yes.
This episode is brought to you by Blue Apron and my grumbling tummy right now. I'm hungry. Yeah, I'm hungry. If I could, I'd grab a Blue Apron recipe and I'd make it. But I can't. I have to do the show first. Then I'll go make some Blue Apron food. You need to know how to cook. And Blue Apron, that's what it's all about. Not only will you feel like you know your way around the kitchen, you're going to get good at it. That's the thing about Blue Apron. They send you a box full of ingredients. Every week you have a new kind of menu on the table. Three or four dishes are sent to you. They have a family plan. So if you want dishes that appeal to, let's say, the younger set versus dishes that appeal to you and your discerning taste. They have a few different options, and you can kind of give them your dietary preferences, all that kind of stuff. You'll get this box that you're seeing in the video in the mail and with all the ingredients that you need, as well as recipe cards that show you what meals you have to look forward to, what ingredients are included with each meal, step-by-step instructions on how to put it all together. And you're going to be eating in no time, and it's delicious stuff. It's super good meals. And just kind of in the process, you're learning how to cook. If you are not as aware of, you know, of your surroundings in the kitchen, what to do, how to chop these things, whatever, it's kind of like a cooking school in a box. And it's really super cool. And like I said, no matter your dietary preferences, Blue Apron is going to make it easy for you to prepare the dishes that you like and that work for you. So if you're, if you have a dietary restriction, something like that, you can use Blue Apron and work around that. Buffalo chicken sandwiches with endive and blue cheese salad. There's a panzanella and blue cheese salad with smashed purple potatoes right in your kitchen. You cook the ingredients that you've never used before. Watermelon radishes, farro, purple potatoes. Like I said, they're purple, people. Recipes are between 500 to 700 calories per portion and take 40 minutes or less to make. No overwhelming trips to the grocery stores. No sad takeout. Don't cry yourself to sleep with that takeout. Make something instead. It's delicious and good for you. Right now, you can get your first two meals free. Just go to blueapron.com/twit. Check out this week's menu. Get your first two meals free by going to blueapron.com/twit and check it out for yourself. It's always a challenge doing this ad read because I get super hungry afterwards. So I'm just going to have to make some Blue Apron a little bit later. We thank Blue Apron for their support of All About Android. I'm going to soldier on though. I'm not going to give my stomach any food. I'm going to devote myself to some apps. So anyone think that maybe their Facebook app was acting weird and not working and should have been acting better than it has been?
It was. I did notice that.
You did?
I did. I did.
Yeah, I've noticed that somewhat regularly. Well, it turns out the information is confirming what we've all suspected. Facebook has been testing user loyalty by breaking parts of it for users to see if users were willing to put up with being tormented. A source familiar with the test told the information, people never stopped coming back.
Oh, God.
I love that there's absolutely nothing that Facebook or Twitter won't A-B test. They're like, if there's something we can A-B test, we're going to do it.
We are, yes.
What if they couldn't launch the app? That's genius. Let's try that one.
At least Twitter is doing A-B testing for like usability, whereas Facebook keeps doing these psychological tests, which, yes, to be honest, are a little freaky, right? This isn't the first time we've heard the psychological test aspect of Facebook, which I scares me. That really scares me. If it's true. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, the information's usually pretty good with this stuff. Facebook is reportedly securing itself for a future in which the company might find itself not relying on Google and the Play Store. In other words, possibly serving their apps through their own kind of ecosystem play. So, you know, whatever that means, could be forked version of Android for a Facebook phone. I feel like we've heard that before. Again.
Yeah.
Heard that before. You know, Google and Facebook go to war and refuse to use each other. I don't know what it means, but
are they doing the same thing for iOS? That's my question. Like, are they preparing for a world where the Facebook app isn't available in the iTunes store? You know, like, why are they concerned about going to war with Google and not Apple?
Because, yeah, that's a good question, actually. Because they can't make an iPhone, but they can make an Android phone. You know what I mean? I don't know.
I think they've tried. I'm not sure they can.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. Well, I don't blame them for looking at a world without the Google Play Store, because as we have complained about numerous times on this very show, sometimes finding apps in the Google Play Store can be a nightmare. But surprise, I was shocked to find this out and delighted. Fandroid broke this news that you can get access to the top Android apps while filtering out the games via a hidden Play Store link. They actually posted the links to get to all the top apps without games, the top paid apps without games, the top free apps without games. And it basically is doing exactly what I wished we could get, which would be to filter out all those games in the application section. And turns out it's just a little URL hacking where you're putting in the URL and you're adding in the kind of subdirectory of applications at the end of it, and it filters out all the games. So nice little Google Play Store hacking going on there, which is kind of cool to see.
Yeah, it looks like some get through. Some seem to get through.
Oh, look at that app. The second one alone.
Oh, look at that. Look at that. That's a nice place.
Hey, I've heard of that one.
It's nice.
Pocket Casts.
Yeah, something.
Okay. Yeah. Pocket Cats. What's cats
pocket
in your pocket?
Cats.
Genius. Doesn't hurt at all.
Anyway. I think this is great to see that it's available, and maybe this becomes the type of thing where Google sees people are doing this. In fact, somebody made an app that is the Google Play Store minus the games. And so if they see users doing this, maybe then they'll adjust the archaic infrastructure of the Google Play Store and let us filter out these annoying games. Yes. Not that I'm against that games.
No. When I'm looking for a game, I know I'm looking for a game. Why can't you just let me tell you, like, games, apps.
Yeah,
like
right.
I'm looking for a game that might be an app.
When I'm looking for some sort of productivity app, I don't want to run across 9 different, you know, and honestly, the games aren't the problem. The problem are the icon sets for themes and like all those customization ones and things like that. There's just so much bloat in the Play Store now, and it's hard to find anything meaningful. So, yeah,
it's true. Yeah. It can be a bit much to kind of have to filter through. Yeah. You're a game hater, aren't you, Ron?
No, I like games. Don't get me wrong. I'm pro games. But they have their place.
It's true. You know? It's true. So. And it's actually very surprising that you can't isolate just apps versus games in the Play Store as easily as you should be able to, because they are two very distinct and different categories. Very strange.
Right. And I will go as far to say that there is.
Yes. Yes. Oh, man. We're waiting for you to go as far to say that.
He went too far.
I don't think it's going to happen.
Dramatic pause from Ron.
Go as far to say that nothing. No, you have nothing to say,
Ron. Do you
reckon
Google cut him off there? I know Microsoft owns Skype, but I think there could be something going on.
I think all the fans, the fans of games have spoken. They've said, you no longer get a voice on this show. All right, fine, fans of games. We'll continue.
You win this round.
You win. But Ron will be back. If it wasn't
for
you.
He'll get the achievement for going too far when he comes back.
We have an email from Jane, who writes in to say,
the person whom you're trying to
reach. Oh, sorry.
That's not Jane. That's not Jane. That's somebody else. That's Skype lady.
Very British.
We'll see. We might get Ron back. We might not. If not, you know what, Russell? You're a seasoned pro. We can do this.
We got this.
Jane writes in to say, I got an Android phone purely for economic reasons, hearing from many sources that it is inferior to Apple. It works well enough and in some ways better for my very poor vision. I tried to avoid the Google Play Store in favor of Amazon App Store for Android. Now there is a war between Google and Amazon. I've got several $35 of apps from Amazon, and without the Amazon App Store app on my device, these programs don't run. Yes, by design. Google is doing everything it can to dissuade me from using the Amazon App Store app. Frightening messages like, warning, this app may harm your device. Translation, if it ain't from Google Play, we label it as malware. Bugga bugga. The developer and users are caught in the middle. Please tell me who I can write, where I can write, an email to protest this walled garden business practice. I'm afraid I'll be forced to rebuy my $35+ apps from Google. I thought this was an interesting email to kind of illustrate, like, on one hand, like, I feel like we are so connected and close to this stuff that we take for granted certain messages that might appear and marketing messages that might come from either camp, be it Google, Amazon, or even the Android apps, the Android operating system, you know, something like warning, this app may harm your device. On one hand, folks like Russell and myself see that, and we understand to a certain degree that is because there is a security system inside Android that says, if you check this, you let other, you know, unchecked apps not from the Play Store be installed on your device. And what you're basically doing is that is potentially a hole on your device to let in some sort of vector or a bad guy to steal your data or whatever the consequences would be. But on the other hand, I can see where she's coming from, right? Like, I can see how you could see that and interpret that as being like, this is a big scary message to kind of lure you away from the other side. And I just wanted to kind of read this and say, Jane, like, I'm not sure that it's necessarily Google or Amazon trying to scare you in any way as far as this is concerned. I think what it is it's just two competing, you know, number one, it's an operating system that's trying, and I'll put it in air quotes because maybe it deserves that, but trying to protect you from consequences. But two, you're right. Like, if you're buying into one ecosystem versus the other, Amazon versus Google, you're really putting your money into one basket versus another. And unfortunately, that is a choice that you're making that eventually might not, you know, you might end up paying more as a result of that. And I don't know if it's necessarily malice. I think it's just kind of the way it is when you're talking about an open source operating system like Android that has a lot of different ways that you can get these kind of apps and stuff onto your device.
I was going to say it's worth pointing out that you'll get that message for any apps that you install that are outside of Google Play. So it's not necessarily Google picking on Amazon. I think it's more, like you say, it's a security thing. It's to say, hey, we don't know where this app came from. We don't know who made it. You know, there might be a good developer. There might be a bad developer. It could even be malware. Like, the operating system has no way of knowing that. Right. So it's just letting you know, hey, if you install this, if you turn this setting off, then, you know, bad things may happen. And you're kind of venturing off into territory that we don't, you know, really deal with. And I think that's fair enough. Like, maybe the message needs to be a bit clearer in what it means. But I will say about the Amazon App Store is I have a lot of feelings about Amazon as a company and their App Store in particular. And I think if you feel like you have the choice, if you're like, should I buy this on Amazon or should I buy this on Google Play, I'd always go with Google Play personally, because you know that in the future, you know, the money that you spent in there, you're still going to be able to access on any Android device. Whereas you can't really say the same thing about Amazon. Like, I know they have, you know, a lot of good stuff in there and they're trying to build their own platform, but it's, yeah, there's always the possibility that this stuff's not going to work in the future. If they one day, you know, shut down their store or they get rid of their stuff, then you could kind of be left out in the cold. And I mean, the funny thing is we are talking about $35, and I'm not trying to belittle that. That is a lot of money. That's a decent amount. If I had to go and spend $35, I'd think about it. But at the same time, you know, $35 for your, you know, $500 phone or whatever you're paying, plus your phone contract and whatever else, if you stack those things up, you haven't really thrown away a huge amount. Like, I see people agonizing over, you know, should I buy this $1 app? And you're like, I know where you're coming from, but I bet you, you know, if you really felt like a can of Coke or something, you'd buy the can of Coke. You wouldn't sit there and read the reviews on the can of Coke. You wouldn't do all that. You know, you'd just be there. If Pepsi's your thing, you know, you grab Pepsi. I don't want to, you know, preference one over the other. But you know what I mean?
Yeah, no. And I mean, I do respect the fact that $35 to one person is not $35, you know, is not the same as $35 to another person. Could be a lot of money. But I think you're right. Like, at least from my perspective, probably safer to go with the Google route, only because that's as close to the source as you can get, as far as I'm concerned, right? That's as close to, it's probably a big reason why we tend to talk about like Nexus devices on this show, possibly outweighed, you know, outside of how they compare from a market dominance perspective to other devices. We do that because it's as close to what Google envisions as you can get. And that's kind of an important place to be when you're talking about apps or when you're talking about hardware in the ecosystem and all that kind of stuff. It's important to know that Google is kind of at the head of that and kind of pulling the strings. And I don't know, if you put yourself there, you're probably going to get more longer for that money potentially than you would if you put it into an alternative app store.
One other quick addendum. I'm sure you've talked about it before, but Google Play Rewards is something I'm oddly addicted to. And it is, it's a Google app that you install. You answer quick surveys and they give you, you know, like a dollar or 10 cents or 50 cents. And what I find is when it comes time to buy apps, I feel terrible about this because I'm a developer and I should just pay money. But I've already got like $5 worth of Google Play Rewards credit. And I'm like, now I can buy whatever app I want and not have to worry about, you know, am I spending my own money or not?
Now, as a developer, you would probably know this, and I'm curious. I mean, that's the same as money to a developer, right?
Yeah, from a developer point of view, it makes no difference whether you gave us the $5 or you got it through. Is it Google Opinion Rewards? I think is its technical name.
Yeah, actually, it is. So Wade County in chat is saying Google Opinion Surveys. Yeah. And that'll help her buying apps.
Check that out if you haven't heard of that app, Jane. Definitely worth a look. And the surveys are really short. Like the ones I've answered are like 10 seconds. And I know that my time is potentially worth more than the 10 cents I get, but I'm just addicted. I just wait for those notifications that say,
you know, a new survey is available. I'm like, ooh, I must drop everything I'm doing.
Wade County in chat says $61.92 in 2 years. So that adds up.
Wow.
There you go. All you need, Jane, are 2 years of awards of Google opinion surveys. That's all you need. Ron, we got you back.
I'm back. Sorry about that. The hotel said, you're using up too much bandwidth. But I'm
back. You probably hit like the time limit, right?
Some sort of. I don't know. I just had to recycle the Wi-Fi connection. I'm fine now. So
cool.
So
well, I can't remember what you were about to say, but it was really dramatic.
I was going to make a declaration that I bet you there's another podcast somewhere that's complaining about all these apps mucking up, making it hard to find games. Like what we see is the glass half empty with the Google Play Store. I'm sure someone else sees this half full. So that's all. So
yeah, that's true. Man, that was so like 5 minutes ago.
I know. It's so anticlimactic. I'm sorry. The only thing that could save us would be a sponsor.
Yes. A legal Zoom.
Legal sponsor.
Yes. A legal sponsor. This episode is brought to you by Legal Zoom. Before another year passes, take the time to get your life organized with Legal Zoom. Do you have family? Do you have any assets? Or if you own property, if you don't answer yes to any of those questions, you should have an estate plan. Don't worry if that sounds complicated. LegalZoom can help. LegalZoom's estate plan bundles eliminate the guesswork. You don't have to figure out on your own whether a will or a living trust works best for you. Instead, you work with an independent attorney available in most states. They'll walk you through your options, recommend an estate plan that offers the best solution to fit your needs. Since LegalZoom is not a law firm, you can count on efficiency and value. Everything is on your schedule and your own terms. Plus, you'll know what your estate plan bundle costs upfront instead of worrying about hourly rates. That's how LegalZoom has become the leader in helping small business owners and families with their legal needs. You need legal help, and you walk away feeling great. Get your life organized with an estate plan bundle at LegalZoom.com today. Don't forget to enter AAA in the referral box at checkout. That's code AAA at LegalZoom.com. And we thank LegalZoom for their support. All right, everyone. It's time for the first arena of 2016.
So many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena.
Ooh, this is going to be a challenge because I realized I didn't create the next poll and I've got everyone's apps to show off. This would be interesting. This would be interesting. I think I can do it though. But let's check in on.
And your time starts.
Yeah. Yes. I'm going to be typing with one hand and playing with an app with the other. Let's take a look at the last arena last year. Check in on it and see who is Triller. Triller was the music video app. So, Ron, you were not here for that episode.
I was not.
And I'm pretty sure that you were happy that you weren't for this particular demo because it involved some lip syncing.
Yes.
And I know that you
know how much
kinda,
I love that, right?
You kind of get all weirded out about lip syncing, but it's a really cool app. It's very awesome. So Triller wins with 60%. Puffin Browser, that was Aaron Newcomb's app, 26%. And Christmas Radio, just a lot of Grinches in the audience, apparently, 13%. Sorry about that, Flo. So 2015 standings are final. Guests, so Flo, 5, although kind of not fair because she started halfway through. Guests, 11. Ron, 15. And me, 20. Man, that like shifted real fast.
It did. It really did. Shifted. It's funny how it moves so quickly.
You think you got it nailed down, and you actually don't. All right, so who should we start with? Let's start with something easy, so I can create a poll. Ron, you want to go
sure,
first?
Sure, I will go. So anybody who has been utilizing Android with the most recent updates with Android M and Marshmallow and all the amazing developments we've seen on the developer side of things, one thing that has emerged most recently has been the idea of custom tab browser windows within apps that allows you to access web pages quickly. So, for example, you know, an app like Facebook is able to embed a custom tab of Chrome within their app so that when you click a link, you can go to it very quickly within the app and that sort of thing. It's a neat little thing, but not every app has it. Not every developer has installed it. If you have a link, you might have to open up Chrome in its own instance, and sometimes that can take time and it's annoying. Well, no more. app that I'm looking at is called Chromer. And basically the premise of this app is that it lets you use Chrome custom tabs on your phone without any of the apps they're using, developers implement it themselves. So, and you might be wondering, okay, well, what's the difference? You know, what's the point of this? In an app like Google Now, for instance, you can tap on a link as Jason just did, and you see it loads in a custom tab in basically a Chrome window. Now, the advantage of this is that it's a lightweight browser. It loads faster. Okay. And because it's basically using the underlying Chrome that's already on your device, you get all of your Google logins are already there, your passwords, your autofills, everything is all there, but existing within the app experience. All right. You can also use Chrome's data saver feature, all that sort of stuff. It is basically an instance of Chrome without actually running Chrome on your phone. If you are a heavy user of your phone, you know that the resource load that Chrome can take, as much as I love Chrome, it can get a little bloaty, get a little heavy and that sort of thing. One of the reasons why they introduced Chrome custom tabs into the Android operating system is to make the web browsing experience within apps go quicker. The problem is that not every developer is implementing it. So Chromer is the kind of thing that once you install it, you realize that you can't really go back, and not use it. So that's basically it. Allow any app to utilize Chrome custom tabs within the app without it being developed. There you go.
There you go. Yeah, it's super quick. I mean, you tap one and it has kind of pre-caching and stuff that it can do also.
It's leveraging everything that Chrome uses. Yeah, exactly.
So. Am I safe to be showing anything Star Wars with you now, Ron?
Oh, yeah, I've seen it multiple times. So okay, cool. Yes, it's fine. So one question in the chat room is that can you use it without Chrome on your phone? No. Chrome custom tabs actually do require Chrome to be installed because it's leveraging the code within that. And actually the developer recommends that you have Google Chrome 45, version 45 or higher, because that's the version that supports custom tabs. So you need to have it on there. And he provides a link where you can download it if you don't have it. But you should have that anyway because Chrome is great. So Chromer just makes the Chrome experience on your phone that much better. And it's already – I mean, it's a strongly, strongly well-reviewed app in the Google Play Store. I think it's got a 4.9 rating right now. It's one of those things where, I went through and I actually changed the Facebook default browser from Facebook's implementation to Chromer because I found Chromer was faster. So, yeah.
Yay! I actually like Chromer a lot. I was playing around with it at the end of last year, which seems like an eternity at this point, and it was on Android App Arena. And yeah, it's kind of crazy the more you use it, how fast things kind of snap over. It would be really cool if you could get that as well as kind of like the benefits of the bubble browsing, to where you can kind of load it off to the side, have it load quick and all that kind of stuff. But I really like it. It's a cool implementation.
It really improves the whole web browsing experience when you're using within apps, like opening, a Twitter link or great example was somebody sent me a link via email and I opened it in my email client. I had to open Chrome, and all that. And it just took forever. And then I did that whole process again with Chromer and it was like that. It was like noticeable. So,
All right. I'm still buying time. Russell, you're up next.
Sure. So my app is a game. Sorry, Mr. Ron. But at least I'm not going to get myself.
Game hater.
Games are okay. I never said games were bad. So
the game has a really cool name. It's called A Good Snowman is Hard to Build. And the basic premise is you're this little, I don't even know how to describe it. Yeah, you're this little black kind of amorphous blob. And your one and only job is to build snowmen. So you have to put the biggest block of snow at the bottom, then the next one on top, and then the one after that. Jason's just going through the tutorial there. And the cool thing about it is once you've, you have all these little different puzzles that you do, and it starts off really easy. So you just start off with, you've got three different sized snowballs, and you're like, cool, I'm going to put these on top of each other. So Jason's just going to push that. There you go. And now you got to push it on top, and you're going to get the little one on there. And so it starts off really simple. You're like, yeah, okay, I could figure out how to do this. And then it progressively gets harder. So for example,
I build a snowman.
Yeah, look, it has a name, Lucy. And now if you tap on the snowman, Jason, the little amorphous thingy, he hugs it. Look at that. It's just beautiful.
I do when I build a snowman. I hug it.
Yeah, you give it a name and give it a hug. That's just how it works. And so the puzzles get progressively harder. But the cool thing about it is it's got a cool soundtrack to it, and it's really, I mean, if you're into casual gaming, this is about as casual as it gets. You know, you can leave it at any time and come back. You can, and now, Jason, you can actually wander off into different parts of the map. You can make him walk just by tapping. There he goes.
Oh, I see. This is the next level. See, later I was just playing the same level again, wasn't I?
You've got like little snowballs, and if you push them through the snow, they get bigger. But the deal is you don't want to make three giant ones because then you can't stack them. And so it starts to become more and more of a puzzle game. And I think, I don't know, something about that weird black-looking thing pushing snowballs around is just hypnotic. I can't get enough.
Huh.
I think Jason
The music definitely helps with the hypnosis.
Oh, so did I do it? I did it the opposite way, didn't I?
That'll still work. So push that little thing down. We're gonna not that way, Jason.
don't I stack like that and then I?
Oh yeah, that will work as well. There you go. So more than one way to solve each puzzle.
Andy.
Now you built Andy. Oh. Andy Narka will be very happy.
What's up, Andy? Let's give you a hug.
And that's pretty much all there is to the game. There's a lot else to it. And this is something you can spend your Google Opinion Rewards money on, because I think it's not cheap. It's like $4 or something.
So then I go in there. Oh, yeah. Okay. I see. So I've got a... okay. I'm stupid suddenly. I'm going to have to play this offline. A Good Snowman. $4.99. I like me a good puzzle game. And this is for all those people who want to build a snowman.
Yeah. And hug it afterwards.
And hug it afterwards. And give it a name.
Okay, bye.
Yes. Thank you, Ron.
You're welcome.
Thank you. That's
everyone
what I
was thinking
for.
It.
Yep. Oh, I know. 247. I'm so almost there. I think I did it. Okay.
I was meant to more time. Sorry.
Oh, no. I think I got there. Okay. So mine is, sorry, I'm just a little unprepared right now, apparently, at the moment. But mine is pretty quick. It's called Define. And this is just kind of a cool way to tap into dictionaries so that you can on the fly define words that happen, you know, they need to define on the fly, essentially. So I'll kind of show you the app. When you first launch it, it'll give you the option to, you know, either download the WordNet dictionary, Livio dictionary. You can also sync it with kind of the Urban dictionary, all that kind of stuff. So let's see here.
The only dictionary that matters, Urban Dictionary.
Yeah, that's a pretty important dictionary, I got to say. we'll go ahead and go into Google Plus. I'll do, let's see here. What is a good word? Android. And let's see here. Why am I? Oh, yeah, that's right. You copy it. So when you copy it, you get the floating thing. Click to view the meaning. Gives you that. Gives you kind of the word, which I don't have that dictionary loaded, but the Livio dictionary, Android, noun, you know, gives you the full dictionary. It also gives you the Urban dictionary, which I'm happy I put something in there that wouldn't pull up something that I didn't want to see there. And you've got some direct access to other things too, like you can jump right to Wikipedia for that. Some of this stuff kind of seems similar to what you might get in, let's say, Google Now on Tap, or the Chrome has a feature where if you tap on a particular word while you're in Chrome, sometimes it'll kind of pop up a thing from down below that gives you a little bit of extra context on that. But it's just, I don't know, it's just kind of a cool way to get a little bit of extra extra information in kind of a pop-up way. Again, you highlight it, you copy it, and it'll give you the pop-up. And from there, you can kind of, you know, I could just enter in new stuff or share it out, copy it, however I want to do that. But it's just kind of, I think, implemented well. Pops up on the top. You want to act on it? You can. You don't have to. You can swipe it away, all that kind of stuff. It is called Define. It is free and a cool way to bring definitions and dictionaries into your Android experience in a lightweight way. There you go. Starting the year off with three very different apps usually makes for a good arena. Go to AAApoll.com/247, even though I put 6 in there because I got it wrong. Try now, Brian. 247. AAApoll.com/247. Let your voice be heard. Is it Define, Cromer, or A Good Snowman? And we'll check back in on this next week. Looks like Cromer has an early lead. Yeah, People like to speed up their browsing, so that makes sense.
I gotta start this year off with a bang, Jason.
Yes,
I gotta 2015 was the year of Jason, which I'm okay with. You earned it. It was very strong. It was good. This is Florence's first full year, although she's starting it off with no wins, so that's good. I gotta come back. I gotta make my comeback this year. So
we'll see what happens. Yeah. It's a long, long year, Ron.
It's a long year. We know it. It's a marathon, not a sprint.
Yes. Yep. We could make predictions halfway through the year, and then we will possibly be wrong.
Yep.
That's it for this week. Russell Ivanovic, always a pleasure getting you on the show. I'm sure you're going to be out here for Google I.O. not too long from now. It hasn't been announced, of course, but I'm sure you have plans to make it out here. Is that right?
Yeah, I think I'll definitely be there. I just can't resist me at Google I.O.
Excellent. Well, the invite stands because I think that's when you were on last time. If you're in the area and you want to come on, be on. We'd love to have you on the show if you're in the area.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me on. And also, if there happens to be a photographer there next time, then I'm cool with that. If you want to have me on your website for another year, it's all good.
I think what will probably happen is we'll update the web image with Ron until then. And then, Ron, if you're here, great. If you're not, I mean, I don't know what to tell you. Russell's going to be back. It's going to be an endless battle.
I defer to Russell. Some tropical holiday location somewhere, so I don't think he feels that bad.
That's true. He was, and probably won't be going back there again for Google I.O. Who knows? Maybe we'll get you into Google I.O. this year, Ron.
One could hope. Crossing my fingers. This is the year.
Russell, always a pleasure. ShiftyJelly.com. Anything else you want people to search out for you?
No, that's probably the best place to go. If you really want to give me feedback on how terrible I've been, Rusty Shelf on Twitter.
Or how awesome. Do that one too, please.
But you should also obviously check out Material Podcast.
So, yes.
We've got Yasmin Evian and Andy Nutko on that. Really good show. You know, when you've got an hour to spare.
Yes.
Load it up.
Do it. Relay.fm, and you can find the whole network of shows that they over there, including Material. Ron, what about you?
Yes. Yeah, so you can go to about.me/RonXO, where you can find links to all my social networks, where you can see all my comings and goings. You can see why I'm at CES at my day job at my company over at Drop. You can go to getdrop.com. And check out my other podcasts. If you're discovering this show for the first time and you got it to this point and you want to hear more, go to ifanboy.com for comic book talk, and go to Goodfellas. Minute.com for analysis of Martin Scorsese films, or one film. So there you
until you reach the end, and then you'll re-examine your life, basically.
Exactly.
Thanks, Ron. Have fun at CES, and don't get sick.
I will do my best.
Brian, what about you?
Per usual this year, I'm doing Know How with Padre on Thursdays, and we're switching it up, and we're doing two episodes a week, so Thursday at 11 o'clock and also Monday, and I haven't I'm going to assume it's 11 o'clock, but we're doing two episodes a week now, so check that out.
Radical. Yes, there have been some schedule changes. You can check, I think, inside.twit.tv to see all of those, including the two episodes a week of Know How.
Well, it's like the schedule changes and CES all in the first month, so we're all kind of running around like crazy.
Yeah, it's chaos. That's what CES does to all of our lives in the technology world. That's just the way it goes. I wish I could say I was used to it by now.
it's like so mean because you can't start the year like normal, because it's like you get out of the holidays, you're like, all right, CES.
Totally. There is no downtime. There is no easing back into it. It's like the craziest time ever. It's like the Super Bowl right after you just took a long nap.
It's brutal.
All right. As for me, about.me/Jason Howell, yellowgoldmusic.com for my music. I'm also, doing Android app arena at twit.tv/arena every Wednesday. And I'm now co-hosting Tech News Today, Monday through Friday, with Megan Maroney here. We get an awesome guest and maybe even interview some other people and just talk for an hour about the tech news, the big things that happen. Twit.tv/TNT. It records every Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Pacific for about an hour. So, why don't you check that out too? We're having a lot of fun and we've only just begun. But that is it for this week for this show. Leave us a voicemail, 347-SHOW-AAA. You can send us an email to AAA@twit.tv. We are on Twitter at Android Show. We have a subreddit, twitaaa.reddit.com, that we search, see what kind of stories you guys are liking. Show notes and past episodes can be found at twit.tv/AAA. Oh, and we have a Google Plus community. And you can find all our episodes on YouTube, iTunes, and this place called Pocket Cast, too. And finally, we record live every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific, live.twit.tv. That is it for this week. We will see you next week on another episode of All About Android. Bye-bye.